Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 209, recorded on May 16th, 2014. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me in Colorado is Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
Mr. Michael Johnston, how are you?
I'm good. I was going to say Denver, but you're not in Denver, right?
I'm in Boulder.
You're in Boulder, okay.
But unlike a lot of people that I have met that live in Boulder, I would not be offended if you said I live in Denver.
Sure. Not an offensive place to be.
Yeah, I'm good all the way around.
Good, good. And I know where Adam is. He's in sunny San Diego, California. Adam Christensen from the MacCast. How you doing?
Good. Yeah, it's been a little crazy around here the last couple of days, but
yeah, by sunny
and,
I mean like
safe and
fiery.
Yeah, you've been dealing with what my previous two summers were.
Yeah, and it's one of those, you know, every place has its natural disaster. You know, yeah. Ours is we get fire, and you see the news and you think, you know, the whole place is burning, and it's pretty close to that. But you know, it's just scary because the fire in my case was about 2.2 miles away from my house, one of the bigger ones. And I mean, I could see 100-foot walls of flames from my backyard.
Wow.
And when that's going on, that's a little frightening. And luckily, we were north of it, and it never really came this way because of the winds. But
sure,
you know, you're watching also your neighbors and your friends and people. I mean, it's devastating, and there's nothing. You know, unfortunately, there's nothing you can do about it. And thank God for Cal Fire and the firefighters here. I mean, they flew it like a DC-10. Tanker plane like 500 feet over my house to
wow.
go drop water on that thing. And how the guys do it, I have no idea. They must be incredible engineers and scientists, because they sort of weaved it through the canyons. And I know some houses have burned, but it could be way worse than it is. And so far I don't think there have been any deaths or injuries that I've heard of. And so to me, that's just amazing, because there were something like 12 fires going on in one day.
That's nuts.
Just nuts. Yeah, it's
crazy.
Yeah.
I heard there were some fire NATOs.
Yeah, there were fire NATOs.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah, because we get what's called the Santa Ana winds, and they're really strong, high winds, and it just starts blowing everything around. And yeah, it's crazy. But we're safe, and it seems like it's calming down, although I just saw another flat fire broke out today. More in an unpopulated area, so
that's wild.
Yeah, it's been the last few days here have been kind of a little bit stressful, but we're good.
Yeah, all I had up here was the heat, and I guess
hot.
That was supposed to be attributed. Was that Santa Ana that was bringing the winds up here too?
Because what happens is you start getting the Santa Ana's come out from the east out across the desert.
Oh,
you get
all that
desert heat. Yeah, normally, I mean, most of the year we're getting offshore winds that are coming from the west off the Pacific Ocean, so that keeps it nice and cool.
Yeah.
But when it flips around and it's really blowing strong, you're getting basically everything from out in the desert. It's just the desert air just flowing in, and then it's really dry. That's the problem with when they're fighting these fires, is normally we have pretty good humidity. You know, it's dry. You feel dry, but there's still a lot of moisture in the air because it's coming off of the ocean.
Right.
When it flips the other way, it's just dry, dry, and that does not help with the fire.
Yeah, I can't imagine it would. So, thanks for the weather report to all of us, to me and everybody. Let's talk about some iOS-related
news. I don't know
what's
going on with Apple, because I haven't been paying attention.
Well, there's not a whole lot going on, but we'll do what we can, as we do. So, Apple seems to be restricting retail employee vacation time in September. This is according to iFun.de. This is for, they say that at least the German retail employees in September, they're vacation time is being restricted in September. And that's honestly, that it kind of makes me feel like the good old days when we weren't making up stupid rumors and talking about the, you know, endless mock-ups that people are making and all this, and coming up with stuff out of our butts and just kind of going with stuff that seems pretty legit, like Apple restricting employee vacation time.
Yeah.
And that always seems to be a good indicator that we're getting close to something cool. Yeah, and does seem to fit in with whatever we've been hearing. A lot of stuff points towards September, so looks good. And do you guys see the rumor about from 9to5 Mac? They're thinking we're going to see some split screen multitasking in iOS 8 on the iPad.
Wow, that one, I did see that one, and my first immediate reaction is like, no way,
right?
I'm kind of hoping it's true, though.
Me too. And, you know, it is a pain in the butt to do anything that's more than just super basic stuff. Anything that really involves bouncing back and forth between apps on an iPad or an iPhone, for that matter. But it's not coming to the iPhone.
Really?
It is a pain in the butt. Yeah. I mean, there's not a whole lot of sharing ability still. There's some stuff, of course, you can share back and forth. There's a little bit of tech here and there, like the, what is it, audio bus, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten pretty good at multitasking on my iPad, and to the point where I'm actually using full screen mode and screen switching or desktop switching on my MacBook Pro when I'm not at home connected to my external monitor. And I actually almost prefer working that way now. So it's almost like, and I learned a lot of those techniques from my iPad, you know, just using the four-finger swipe or whatever to move back and forth between, you know, stuff I'm reading, Twitter, and just quickly jump between apps. And I don't find it to really be a problem. And I've never wanted like my email up in a little tiny, like half my iPad screen side of my screen. So I guess it's great if they want to bring it out and if they think people are going to really use it. But I just question how many people really multi-screen task, even when they have it, say, like on an Android tablet. I'd be curious to know if there's people in the audience that are like, yeah, this is the killer feature and I'm going to use it all the time. I have a feeling it's one of those things that people think they want, and then when they're actually using it, they're like, oh, this is stupid because I've got 4 inches of screen real estate, you know, and it's less than that. I haven't measured, you know, if you cut the iPad then in half, I mean, how much really is that column space? It would be enough for like a Twitter feed, I guess, but I almost prefer for that stuff to be hidden.
You know, I'm not sure it's going to be... I mean, it doesn't seem like it's a killer feature, obviously, because there are other tablets out there, the Windows tablets and some Android tablets that do this.
Right.
But I've never heard of it being one of those big things for a lot of people, why they decided they went with something other than the iPad. But at the same time, being that Apple has taken so long to do something like this, and given their history with things like push notifications and the current implementation of multitasking, I think that whatever they do roll out will be as useful as it can possibly be given the screen real estate on an iPad. And whether or not you want to use it, I think that Apple, again, they do a good job of hiding that stuff from people who don't care.
I mean, if you're going to do that, why not just do Windows? I mean, just why not take it all the way?
Well, I mean, at that point, you'd have to have a cursor, I think, with that kind of thing, almost. Well, maybe not, but still. I think that, again, Apple doesn't overcomplicate things like that. So a split screen seems like the next logical step in this.
I think it's not needed. I think it's not needed. That's my argument. I mean, maybe this is precursor to the 12-inch, you know, 13-inch iPad we're hearing about. So, I mean, maybe they're feeling their need to do it because once they get larger screen iPads, it's going to make sense. And why not just build the feature in? I mean, it's fine. If they want to give people the option, that's great. I don't know that I would maybe even ever use it. I might try it, but I have a feeling it's not going to be all that much of a workflow like enhancer for most people.
Well, I think that it, in some ways, whatever Apple does for the split screen, some of the stuff that you can do will be right out of the box kind of stuff, day one kind of stuff, where developers don't really need to change a lot of stuff. But at the same time, there we may need to wait a little while more for apps that make good use of being a citizen in a multi-pane or multi-app at the same time world, right. And see what can actually be accomplished with something like that. Because, I mean, I like the idea of, you know, when I used a, looked at the, what was it, the Kensington, no, the Logitech keyboard cover for TMO. And I was really excited about what I could accomplish with a keyboard on my iPad, because I have a 17-inch MacBook Pro and I don't like carrying that around, and using that to take notes is kind of a pain. So I like the idea of using my iPad. However, it just didn't really work out for me. And I think that a big chunk of that would be mitigated by having another app up. And that's mainly because I need to work with actual math equations and that sort of stuff. And we've talked about that before, but I think it'll be interesting if Apple does roll that out. I think there will be some really interesting use cases for it. And again, for the people who don't want to use it, it's going to be one of those things that you just don't have to worry about. So, developers are now able to provide promo codes for in-app purchases, which kind of seems like a long time coming.
It's surprising that, well, in a sense, that we've gone this long before people have been able to say, oh yeah, Apple's doing this now.
Well, you know, it was a different marketplace. It was a different landscape 2-3 years ago, right? Apps that had in-app purchases were much fewer, much more sparse, and the point of the app didn't really necessarily come from the in-app purchases as much as it does now. For example, I mean, there are so many freemium games out there that this move, certainly at this point in time, makes a lot of sense that it finally came now. And maybe Apple just didn't think that it made a lot of sense or was so necessary back then, because what they thought in-app purchases would be used for was different. I think it was different for everybody back then. We didn't really anticipate it becoming as prevalent and as big of a deal as it is now. Of course, I'm not super psyched about freemium stuff, and I honestly don't like freemium stuff. I would rather, in some ways, I like the fact that you can try before you buy, but the way that it works right now isn't exactly what I want. As I've said before, I like shareware kind of thing where you can use it for 10 days or whatever, or a couple days and see what it's like and decide if you want to pay for it at that point. Not the, games are the most egregious offenders of the, you know, pay us a buck and you'll be able to continue playing. Otherwise you have to wait until tomorrow kind of thing.
Isn't that just like the 80s all over again? Like, insert the quarter to continue playing.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, right. Totally.
It's like, oh, you died. You want to play some more? Put another quarter in.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I never thought of it that way. It's a good way to look at it.
That's been around in video games for forever, I guess, you know, in one form or another. Continue? Question mark.
Right. Yeah. So it seems as though Apple may adopt it. So the resolution that we're looking at, again, this is from 9to5 Mac. For the 5S, they're going to go from, right now it's, of course, 1136 to 640. It looks like they're going to be moving to 1704 to 960 resolution. And that'll be a, instead of 2X from the standard pixel density, it'll be 3X. For a 356 pixels per inch, as opposed to, what is it now? I'm sorry. 416 pixels per inch on the 4x7 inch model, 4.7 inch.
I thought it was, is it 326 on the current pixel density? Something like that.
It's three something, yeah. And that makes sense. So it looks like the 4.7-inch model, according to them, would be a 416 pixel per inch, and the same aspect ratio, and I believe technical dimensions on the 5.5-inch, if it ever manifests itself, will be the same. It'll be 356 pixels per inch. So a lower density on the bigger screen. So it'll essentially be a stretched screen on the bigger iPhone. Kind of iPad mini, iPad style. Assuming, again, yep, we ever see the gigantophone.
Yeah, I think we are.
Totally appropriate term, gigantophone.
Didn't we come up with a new term for it? I can't remember what it was.
I don't know. I like it. I like gigantophone.
Yeah, wasn't it Ken Ray came up with the term?
Well, Ken did gigantophone. Oh.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Which I think is
great. Yeah. You came up with something a few weeks ago, and yeah, it was really good. Now I can't remember what it was.
Maybe it was the show name. I don't remember the show title of the.
No, I think it was in a TMO thing.
Oh, okay. In a TMO thing. Okay. And then there was a very interesting follow-up on that. I believe this was from a forum member on Mac Rumors. He's a graphic designer, pointing out the differences between the 1X to 2X transition and how he believes that the 2X to 3X transition won't be as big of a deal when it does occur. And it makes a lot of sense, of course, because the first time it was an actual doubling. It was 2.0 times what it was. And with a 3X, you're just ending up with a 1.5X increase. So for apps that have not yet been optimized for the 3X, they will not look nearly as bad as it did the first time around when we went to 2X. It was all fuzzy. So that'll be nice. And of course, Apple has been, as we've said, pushing developers to utilize the tools in Xcode to go for a less dimension-dependent design in their apps with all the stuff that they have in there with the auto layout and that sort of thing. And of course, you got to think that there's a lot of lossless stuff. Can you use lossless graphics in your apps? I suppose Xcode, when it compiles, probably rasterizes stuff to the exact sizes that are needed. I don't know if you guys, either of you, know how mm-hmm. that works. No,
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't think I'm not sure that what you end up with in a pack in a package is can be a lossless thing. Although maybe it can be. Maybe you can have some PDF stuff in there. If you know, let us know. feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. But you got to think. I mean, especially with the way that iOS 7, all the textures and the more flat design overall, it's certainly more conducive to having lossless vector files for anything that is not system based or text based. And of course, there's so much text based stuff in iOS 7 to begin with. It almost begs to be messed with as far as its resolution goes, because it's already almost resolution independent because you just don't have as many raster graphics in there anymore. So, I have not read this at all, but I guess Apple is planning to prepping HD audio playback for iOS 8 alongside a new in-ear headphone and lightning cable. Do you guys see this at all?
Jeff might know a little bit about it.
Yeah, brief us on this.
Okay, so
I think you wrote a piece on it, didn't you, Jeff?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
So the deal is, right now, you can't play 24-bit, 48 kilohertz audio files on the iPhone.
So it just, does it transcode it or it just doesn't play?
Yeah, I think it just doesn't play.
Okay.
And so this rumor is that Apple is building support for that into iOS 8. And if it's just a software change, then great. But if it's a hardware-based thing, well, then that means only devices going forward would have support for that. And if Apple is truly going for high-def audio support, then they have to do something about their headphones, because the audio quality in their headphones is marginally okay. And it's nothing that can handle the quality level that you would get from high-def audio. So they would definitely need to do something about that. It would be nice to see high-def audio support. It would also be nice to see support for more audio formats just built in.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah.
I'd almost prefer that to support for high-def audio.
Oh, actually, I would prefer that to high-def audio support.
Talking like FLAC files?
Sure.
Whatever you want. I mean, why does it matter?
I guess it shouldn't.
Right?
And there's no hardware decoding built into the... Or is there hardware decoding built in for AAC?
There is.
There is.
Okay. I'm pretty sure. But, I mean, I don't think those chips are restricted like that. I mean, Apple's using, different signal processing and audio processing chips in there, and they're usually opened up. It's just I don't know where the restrictions get put in place in terms of formats. I think it's just a decision Apple makes and says, look, the iTunes player is only going to, or the music player is only going to support these audio formats.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's technical restrictions. And it wouldn't surprise me if you looked at whatever audio signal processing chips are in the iPhone and they could do all kinds of stuff in hardware, even I would imagine.
I would assume so too.
I don't know. I'm not sure many people care too much about this.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing at the end of the day. I mean, it's like the split screen thing too.
I think it's even less than that, possibly. But because, I mean, I'm going to say it, kids these days, they listen to stuff on YouTube.
I know.
And it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't care what the quality of the audio is, let alone what friggin' codec it uses. Oh, MP3. Everything. I mean, MP3 is synonymous with anything that's a music file. So who cares if it's AAC or MP3, what the bitrate is or what have you. And I mean, the stuff you get off iTunes, if you're buying stuff off iTunes, it's pretty good quality. It's hard to really discern at that level. They're doing, what, 256 AAC, and AAC is pretty good, even at like 192.
Yep, there's a lot of people out there that they won't be happy unless they're getting higher bit rates.
Yeah, but those people buy like European MP3 players anyway and like listen on their crazy headphones. But yeah, it will be cool. For sure. I love when Apple does stuff like this. It's certainly been Apple doesn't do a lot of stuff like this anymore, where they're catering to niche groups. So, and it makes sense, of course, with iOS 8, we're not really clamoring for a new and improved interface or anything like that. It's kind of one of those, it's sort of like Mavericks in a way, where we're just, We got a lot of the big stuff out of the way. There are going to be a few headliner features like the health book and stuff with the watch and this and that. Maybe the multitasking. But I can definitely see, okay, higher quality audio. Cool. That makes sense. And, of course, they're all about the quality.
It'll be on, I mean, if it's in there, it's on that ending slide where there's like, 57 new features, right?
Well, I mean,
and
I don't
you
know.
Scan over it. I don't think that's a... That's a noteworthy.
Yeah, you're probably
like we're
going
to bring this up as a thing.
You're probably right. Unless it's something that involves iTunes, where they're actually going to... Well, do you think they're going to then
Unless it's something that goes along with the new headphone brand that they're launching. Yeah.
Their new Beats by Apple.
Specifically engineered for the higher quality audio, you know, specifically tuned to be matched with the new higher quality audio format, yeah, then they'd do something like that.
Right, yeah, if they're doing that, then. Yeah, otherwise, I think it would be on that last slide, in that big bubble of that, a text cloud, tag cloud?
Oh, yeah.
Feature cloud. It's a feature cloud.
A feature cloud.
So, speaking of Beats, I guess we're expecting if there is going to be some kind of announcement, which at this point I'm kind of rolling back to the other side. I'm thinking this might not happen. I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm hoping or if I'm thinking, but I'm feeling like I feel like it's not going to happen. But if it does happen, I can't imagine it's going to happen for $3.2 billion.
If it's happening for $3.2 billion, there's a really big component about this that we just don't understand.
Yeah, it has to be that. If it is $3.2 billion, nobody has figured out why Apple is buying it. Because for what we have looked at, and I don't think we saw this last week, but I think... What's it called? Beats Music, their streaming service. They only have like 100-something thousand users.
Yeah, it's 111,000 users.
I mean, so they're not buying it for users, that's for sure.
Which would be out of line with the way Apple has conducted business in the past. They have not bought companies
for
their
users.
Share.
Right, right.
That's definitely not what's going on here, if there is a deal in place.
So, but we're thinking that we're going to see it at WWDC if there's going to be an announcement. So, and that's what? Where are we? Do you have a countdown clock going somewhere? Anybody? That's next month, next first week or the second week of June?
First week.
First week of June. So, yeah, in mere weeks, we may see... Dr. Dre and Tim Cook on stage at WWDC. Shaking hands.
We may see that.
We may see that. Or if Tim Cook, well, I was going to say, if Tim Cook knows what's good for him, I would say just stick with Iovine. But then Dre is probably going to insist that he is allowed to be on stage for the announcement.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I like Dr. Dre. It just doesn't seem to fit. It's a weird combination.
Yes, it is.
And there's another little report from Recode. They're saying that the deal may not be finalized until next week. Well, that makes sense. I can't imagine the deal is finalized yet. It's probably going to be a kind of a last minute thing. Well, I guess they're not going to bring it down to the wire. Because we still got we have a couple weeks until WWDC, so it probably won't be down to the wire, but it'll be pretty close.
Yeah. I'm thinking there is a deal. It's going to happen. And until it all comes together and we see how Apple's using the pieces, we're just going to be sitting here thinking, what the hell?
Yeah. So what do you guys think about the fact that Apple published the iOS human interface guidelines to iBooks? That typically, so this is the document that Apple provides to all developers within the program. So you got to pay your $99 and be an official developer. But once you are, this is like your Bible for creating an application. This shows you what you should do, what you shouldn't do when designing your user interface for iOS to make it a consistent experience with the entire operating system. So it's a really great document. And honestly, I think that it's one of those things that anybody who's interested in iOS apps or iOS in general, it's a very interesting thing to see, because Apple sets a lot of guidelines out there. And as soon as you read through this stuff, you're going to immediately think, okay, this app is doing it wrong. This app is doing it wrong. And it's going to ruin iOS for you like it has for me. But that having been said, it is one of those things that was not available to the public very easily anyway. I don't think Apple really cared too much if people in the public got a hold of it. But the fact that they have published it in the iBooks store makes me wonder, okay, either they're putting it out there because it's so close to WWDC. They're putting it out there because there really isn't going to be a huge change in iOS 8, or they're simply just putting it out there because they don't care anymore.
I was surprised it hadn't gone out before.
Okay, so you don't think that it's any sort of indication of changes or lack thereof in the interface in iOS 8?
No, I think this is about, it's a document that should have been easily available for developers to load up into iBooks. And yeah. So Apple finally just got the book out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, at the same time, maybe it was something that they planned to do all along when it came to when they got to iOS 7. And of course, like you said, it's more convenient for it to be readily available to developers, and there's really no reason for it to not be available.
Right. But
I mean, when I first looked at the guidelines for iOS 7, I thought they were pretty sparse, and that was when it was first released. And I assume they've gone through some iterations of it and added more detail and clarity on how they expect certain things to work. So maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe this is an updated version of the original document.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I think the real story here isn't that it's finally available through the iBook store, but that it wasn't available before now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you guys think about graphene? Did you see this? This is a story. Where was this posted? I guess it was. Oh, this is from Bloomberg. They were talking about how tech companies such as Apple and Samsung are doing research into graphene for their future technology. Have you guys heard about what graphene is?
No.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool.
It is.
And I think it's pretty neat that all these companies are looking into how they can use graphene effectively.
Yeah. Because so
if they can really nail it down and make it work well, what I believe that translates into is smaller components, less heat generated from the devices, and a lower cost alternative to producing silicon components.
Yeah, much lower cost, because as opposed to silicon, carbon is what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's the sixth most abundant element in the universe, for one, which is great. So to back it up and fill people in, graphene is it's a material that's created simply from carbon atoms. It is one atom thick. So it's essentially, they call it two-dimensional because there's hardly any depth to it at all. But, you know, you do have the height of the actual atom, but it's essentially zero. And it's just all carbon atoms that are laid out in I believe it's a triple bonded sheet. And the way that it was presented in this little piece, this little segment on a show called The One Show, they printed it out on a piece of cellophane. And the cool thing about it is it can conduct electricity very well, and it can be printed on, or it can be placed on, very flexible materials. So it's very flexible. It stays together well, conducts a lot of power. So you can make things like touch screens, that are even more clear, I guess. They're probably cheaper than what they do right now. I mean, it seems like the possibilities for something like this are pretty vast. Like you said, Jeff, thinner components, cheaper components, all that kind of stuff. It's very cool. Yeah. There's a link in the show notes. And there's a video in there. It talks about what can be done with it. It's not fully, it doesn't seem like it's commercially viable, at least publicly yet, but it's one of those, it's not going to be in the next iPhone, but it looks pretty cool.
It is very cool.
So the last thing that we have to talk about is, I guess, iTunes 11.2 is released with some not so interesting stuff. Oh, some problems?
I shouldn't upgrade. Yes.
Well, okay. Here's the problem. And this took us some serious hunting today over at TMO to sort out. Okay, so people that installed iOS 10.9.3 yesterday.
iOS 10.
MacOS 10. that they started, or a bunch of us saw the same problem, which was after we installed the OS update, we could no longer see our users directory on our Macs. It had become invisible.
Oh, that's a huge problem.
Yeah. And
so you couldn't get to your home folder or anything?
But you can get it at your home directory. That's not a problem. But applications that expect your home directory to be visible instead of invisible, that in some cases it wouldn't work. In other cases, it couldn't save data. And what we found out after a bunch of digging today was that it's actually, if you have Find My Mac enabled, and then you install the iTunes 11.2 update, it will then change your user's directory to be invisible.
Why?
It's got to be a bug.
Yeah, it's got to be a bug.
So it's
I have find my. I haven't done this update yet, so I have Find My Mac turned on.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not done any of the updates yet because I haven't been really on my computer.
Yeah, if you do the 10.9.3 updater, but not the iTunes update, you're fine.
If I do both, I'm going to lose access to my users folder.
No, if you just do the iTunes update.
You have to do them both.
No, you have to do the iTunes update.
Without 10.9.3. So iTunes.
Yeah, so if you have 10.9.2 installed and you install iTunes 11.2, your user directory will disappear.
And then,
which update should I do and which should I not do at this point?
You can do, it looks like 10.9.3 is okay. Just don't install the iTunes 11.2 update.
So as long as you don't install 11.2, you're cool.
Yes.
So even if you do 10.9.3 and then iTunes, you're still going to have trouble?
Yep. It's as soon as you put iTunes 11.2 on your computer. If you're also using Find My Mac, then you're screwed.
My head hurts.
Yeah, this is cool.
So don't install the iTunes 11.2 update.
Okay. Wasn't planning on it. Didn't seem very interesting.
But the podcast app is telling me I have to, or I need to, or I should.
Probably that you should, not that you need to.
Because they updated the podcast app too.
Yeah, they did.
And but I hear that's. I have one person reporting to me that for him it that's all broken too.
Oh, cool!
But I have another person reporting it fixed a bunch of stuff. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, my feeling is, right now, if those updates are not critical for you, don't install them.
I don't even know what's in either of them. So.
Magic code that hides your user folder.
Great. I think I'll pass.
Yeah, I think I'll pass too. But for what it's worth, I guess there's in 11.2, which you won't be updating to because it's bad. It has improved podcast browsing and resolves an issue where iTunes may become unresponsive, blah, blah, blah. You're not updating to it, so don't worry about it.
Will they just put the podcast track back in GarageBand, please?
That'd be nice.
That'd be pretty awesome.
I haven't used the new GarageBand.
Me neither. And I won't until they fix that.
Yeah.
So the good news for me when I saw that they upgraded the podcast app and they had podcast enhancements in iTunes, I was getting really worried that they were just done with podcasts. But it's actually more a fear that they're done with the enhanced AEC format, which they still probably are.
I'm assuming you're right.
Here's a really interesting story. I almost forgot about it. So I was going to talk about this initially. So the idea that we've talked about how when a user who has an iPhone, they get rid of their iPhone and they switch to another device, such as Android or Windows, something like that. And in some cases, when people on iOS devices go ahead and text those people, the messages do not get sent via text. They get sent by iMessage, even though the person doesn't have iMessage anymore. Even in cases where people turn off iMessage on their device before erasing and doing the whole phone switch thing. And that's a big problem. And it's been going on for at least a year now, if not longer. And today, it's being reported by Bloomberg that Apple is facing a class action lawsuit over this problem.
Of course they are.
Well, you know what? I think it's a fair lawsuit because they need to fix this thing. And they haven't fixed it. It's been around for a long time.
It doesn't necessarily mean that it justifies a lawsuit.
I think it certainly does. So if you're a small business owner and you rely on your phone for business communications and people text back and forth. That's one of the ways that people communicate.
Well, that's like saying Google should get a class action lawsuit every time they have a Gmail outage.
Right.
I guess it's not quite the same because you're talking about a year. But I mean, I don't know. Apple should fix it for sure. People should be screaming from the rooftops that this is a problem. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, that's what this is. That people are screaming.
Yeah, but no, this isn't. This is people wanting. This is lawyers wanting to get a bunch of cash, and the people who are impacted are going to get nothing. So,
right.
Okay. You know.
Well, I agree with with this class action lawsuit. I think that it's justified. I don't think that it necessarily should yield crazy amounts of cash for the people. I think that just Apple fixing the problem swiftly.
That's not what a class action lawsuit is about. They're not suing to get Apple to fix the problem. They're suing just to get some money.
True.
So I would think more what you'd want is somebody doing a massive letter writing campaign or protest campaign or something doesn't the FCC govern text messaging probably?
That's a good question, but I bet you're right.
Yeah. So, you know, you'd think you'd want to lobby and bring it to the government's attention maybe and get them putting pressure on Apple to fix it. I don't know.
Well, you know, that does bring
whatever
up a good
it
point.
Takes. I guess I see your point. The point is if Apple's been ignoring it for a year, this is one way that's going to bring it into public attention and get the fire lit under Apple's butt, I mean, right. There's other ways to do that, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And I'm just not a fan of suing people.
I like what you're saying. I think it's unfortunate that that people don't think about protesting or anything that's non-offensive or non-harmful manner of getting what they need done. They just automatically default to suing. I'm not a fan of that in this country.
Well, even if it was somebody suing directly, I don't know. I mean, I guess people don't have that kind of money, and that's why we have class action lawsuits. But you know, really, the problem I have with class action lawsuits is they never make any. I mean, I've been in a million of them, right? Have you ever benefited really well from any one of them? Probably the biggest one was the iBooks one, right? That happened recently.
Yeah, I did get that. I think with my iPod,
like,
I got
25 or 35 bucks back or something.
I think a third gen iPod.
I don't think I got that much.
Yeah.
Oh, and then there was the iPod Nano one too, right? Where a bunch of people got.
Oh, right. I forgot.
Nanos or something. I got new nanos.
Yeah. I ended up with new nanos out of that.
Nanos. But I mean, very rarely does the person in the class action lawsuit get any kind of benefit out of it.
So it's not to clarify, and I'm not sure this matters, but I believe it's a single person currently, but they're seeking class action status.
So they want to open it up bigger. I mean, that's usually how these things start.
Sure. It wasn't just a year ago. The errors with iMessage have been a known issue since 2011. So since the service was introduced.
Well, I remember situations where people's iMessages, where they trade down a phone or something like that, and then the person they sold it to or whatever would be still getting the iMessages.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this related to that?
I would imagine it must be related to that. I think it's the same exact thing where there is that Apple servers aren't seeing that device is unregistered or shouldn't be getting those messages anymore and is just continuing to try and send them. And in some cases where they're
not
being
only
received.
Is it trying to send them, but it's sending back an indication to the sender that it was received.
Yeah, and that just doesn't make any sense at all. So, okay, in cases where the message is literally being received, but it's on a device that has been erased, unregistered, etc., and those messages are still coming through, that is one problem that we have talked about and seen. And it makes sense that at least a delivery notification is sent back to the person. You get that little delivered indicator on your messages. That shouldn't be happening. You shouldn't, those messages shouldn't be getting to those phones once they've been deactivated. But I'm not sure that this is a situation where those messages are continuing to be actually delivered to the now unregistered, sold, what have you device. In addition to the fact that the person doesn't even have an iOS device. I don't know.
Well, in this case, what appears to be happening is that people that had an iPhone and have switched to another platform, Windows or Android, no longer get messages just from other iPhone owners.
Correct.
Because those are being hijacked by iMessage.
Yep.
And so they're just simply disappearing into the ether, but the sender is being told, oh yeah, it was delivered.
Yeah, that's bad.
I wonder if that's happening with a friend of mine, actually. I texted a buddy of mine a couple months ago, a couple different messages, and we've communicated via other means. And I wonder if that's why he never responded.
That's the other side of this that I guess just gets me in, and this could be my old man disease coming into play here, but the number of people that rely on text messaging as their sole form of communication baffles me.
Yeah, that's an old,
you know,
thing.
Like if I text somebody and I don't get a response, and I text them again and I don't get a response, you know what? I'm going to pick up the phone and call them, right? Like, or I'm going to send them an email. I'm going to use some other alternate form. But there's this whole, it seems like there's this whole segment of society that it's like if you don't do the text message, then that's it. You know, I'm not communicating with you. And oh well. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
You gave you the business scenario, and I get it. If I rely on text messaging for my business, but guess what? If the text isn't being responded to or isn't going through, I'm going to pick up the phone call and I'm going to call my client and be like, hey, I sent you a bunch of text messages. What's going on? Right?
Yeah, you would think so. But at the same time, it could be misread as a situation where you think they're just not responding to you or they're being rude or what have you. I don't know.
Well, then find out. Don't assume.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you know about assume, right? Yeah. We all do.
Yeah. It screws up relationships. That's where you're going with that, Adam, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right.
Picks. Jeff, do you want to go first?
Sure. And my pick this week is actually a request. I've been on the hunt trying to find a good app for my iPad for keeping track of Lego kits. And what I found so far, it's an app called Brick by Brick. And it's a database of the different products Lego makes. And it's okay, but not okay enough that I would want to present it as a pick.
Sure.
So does Brickopedia not have an app?
Oh, I don't know.
But that would be the kind of thing that you were looking for, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Something where I can see all the different kits that are out there and then keep track of the ones that I own.
So do you have a pick then?
No, he's requesting that someone find or write an app for.
Okay.
Yes, because Brick by Brick is okay, but it's not good enough to be an actual pick.
And there's like a Lego wiki called Brickopedia, which I think has extensive information about all of Lego's stuff, including, I don't know if it does the sets. Does it do the sets, Jeff? Have you ever been there?
I think Brickopedia does all the sets too.
Yeah. So just like there's a Wikipedia app, we need like a Brickopedia app.
Is it is Brickopedia, that's a wiki? It's a
Lego wiki.
Wiki. This might help you. It's one of the two apps, the two wiki apps that I use. I'm trying to find. I think it's the one by Sophistication. Articles. I'm thinking it's Articles or maybe not. Let me see here. Languages? No. Okay. I don't think it is Articles. I think it is Wikipanion that does this. Yes. Wikipanion. Do you use Wikipanion?
I haven't used Wikipanion.
Okay. It's free and awesome. It's one of my two favorite ones. And let me see here. Basically, it works by default. It plugs into Wikipedia. However, you can just plug in any wiki source as long as it follows the right formatting, and it'll do it. So I'm searching for Brickopedia right now. Brick, BRICKIPIDEA. Brickopedia.
Yep.
I'm not seeing it. So I guess that's not working. That won't work. Oh, no, here it is. Found it. Brickopedia add. So that might solve it for you. Maybe.
That's definitely, if it doesn't solve it, it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah. You want to be able to track what you have as well, right? So there's a management element to this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so this will let you.
So it's one to get that'll at least get you information on all the sets that are out there, but I don't think it's going to let you keep track of I have this set versus not this set, that sort of thing.
Being able to keep track of all the sets would be awesome, especially when it comes time to buy presents for the nieces.
Yep.
So I don't do what I recently did, which is buy the same set as a present that I previously bought.
That always the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it plugs into Brickopedia basically.
Oh, wait a minute. Well, this is different, but there is it looks like there's an app called Lego Collectors for iPad.
Oh, really?
Well,
how did I not see that before?
It has like a bookshelf motif, kind of like what's the DVD app from Delicious Monster? Oh, Delicious Library?
Yeah,
it looks
Delicious
like
Library.
Delicious Library for Lego sets.
Oh, cool. That might be it right there.
I have seen a screenshot of this somewhere.
And it says you can scan with the barcode to search the database.
Neat. It's $6. There's a iPhone and an iPad version of it.
Oh, it looks like they're separate versions.
Yes. Yes.
That might cover the other half. So between Wikipedia and maybe this one.
They also do comic books. It looks like they do a lot of these little collection, these sort of Delicious style apps.
It looks like it'll let you search through sets,
games.
Too.
Oh, they do.
Well, that's kind of cool.
They do an alcohol version of this, too.
Oh, I should download that twice.
Yeah. Okay, so that might work. I'll put those both of those in the show notes.
And Michael, you got to stop surfing.
Surfing?
Yeah, every time you start poking around on your web browser, you start breaking up for me.
Oh.
Yep, I hear it too.
Interesting. Well, I got to look at what you're talking about.
Okay. Hopefully it's not breaking up on your end.
No, it's fine over here.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So, Adam.
Yes, sir.
Let's hear what your pick is.
All right. I am going to pick something that I have been in the Apple Store many, many times over the past year and avoided this
Oh, you bought Anki Drive, didn't you?
I'm doing Anki Drive, yes. I avoided buying it. I finally broke down because I thought, you know, this is going to be another one of those things where I'm going to buy and I'm going to play it for a week and then forget about it.
I've been resisting. It's been difficult.
And so finally I just like, I think I was having a bad week and I'm like, I just need something fun to and stupid. And if you were ever a fan of slot cars, I used to love slot cars when I was a kid.
Yeah, totally.
But you know, the problem with slot cars is they always go flying off and then they'd break and you know, they were almost kind of cheap and never really lasted. And you couldn't do a lot with them. Like once you set up your little your track, that was kind of it. And that's what I was worried about with Anki Drive. It's like, well, it's just one little track, and you know, what are you going to do? But by connecting it to the phone, you know, to your iOS devices, and being able to like upgrade, so they've built in some really neat gaming elements into the cars themselves, so that they start out all at a certain level, but as you play, you earn credits, and then you can use the credits inside the app to like upgrade your car, so you can give it, you know, better speed or better handling or all these sorts of things. And it is such a blast.
And you can get different tracks now too.
Yeah, you can get different tracks. I wish it wasn't so expensive, because I think new tracks are like $100 and they're huge. That was the other thing. I had read this on reviews that the track, you need a big area of open floor space to roll the track out. It's pretty big. But it's just so much fun to play. And we've just been playing the heck out of it. And I think it will continue again, because you can upgrade, you know, you can get all these kinds of upgrades. Now, I'm curious what it'll be like once we've kind of earned all of the upgrades and all the cars are totally updated. But you start to learn different strategies and how you have to manage your weapons and your resources and stuff like that. So you have defensive weapons and you have aggressive weapons. That was the other part of it, is like to be able to kind of sneak up and launch an EMP, you know, on your opponent and knock them out for a second or two while you race around the track. It's great. About the only downside is we have kind of noticed what I think is a bug, and I have to do a little bit of research on it, where sometimes it'll lose track of the lap count, and you'll think you're in the lead, and then suddenly it'll just award the win to the other person, even though you're like a full lap ahead. So I think it gets out of sync somehow, but hopefully it's just a software bug that they can fix. But no, it's so much fun that I couldn't have it not be my pick, even though it's pricier. And the kit is $200. That gets you the racetrack and two cars.
A good deal, because car by itself is
$70.
Yeah, $60-$70. And then the track is $100. So for $200, you're getting two cars and a track.
Yeah, exactly. And you can play up to four cars at once. And it has a little built-in battery. The battery lasts about 20 plus minutes of play, and it takes about 8 to 10 minutes to recharge the cars. So I was worried that might be a problem, but it really hasn't been too big of a deal. And then it seems like they maybe run for about 30 minutes before they run out of juice, but they say 20 minutes in the manual. It's definitely at least 20 minutes of play for every 10 minutes of charging. So Anki Drive. They're cool. In your Apple store.
How much is it?
$200, $199.
Holy cow, dude.
I know. I told you. It took me a year to pull the trigger because I was like, that's just too much.
I figured you were going to do it when we were up at the Apple store. But I guess the employee there can't get you a discount on that kind of thing, can
I? I don't know. I almost pulled the trigger a million times.
I'm glad I did. I look at that every time I go in the store.
I look at it every time I go in the store and think how funny it is that Adam wants to buy that.
It's so much fun. I am a sucker. I mean, people who listen to the show, anybody who's followed me for any amount of time, I'm a sucker for anything I can connect my iPhone to. I have it all.
Yeah, you got that little ball, right?
I got the Sphero. I don't have a new Sphero yet. I am on the list for the new Tubes, which is their new thing. I have the
Tubes?
The Parrot. I think it's called Tubes.
Yeah, the Tubes looks pretty cool.
Oh, you have the Parrot?
I got to see that at CES.
No, okay, you said...
I have a Nest. I have a Pebble. What else can I hook my phone to?
But you said you do have
I got the Automatic, which I haven't picked yet. Actually, I'm pretty disappointed with the automatic. I wouldn't recommend it.
Oh, you can send it to me.
It's lame. I'm going to keep it because I'm hoping they'll upgrade it with software, but
it's lame? Got
way too many limitations for the price.
That's uncool.
So what were you expecting? You want to talk about it now or do you want to talk about it another time?
Let's do it another time.
Okay.
I can have it be my anti-pick next time.
Okay. We'll do an anti-pick next time.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds great considering I did a request pick this time. We're making up new rules as we go along.
Hey, it works for me. So I guess I'm making up a slightly different rule too for what I'm doing. So I'm not sure which is my real pick. I think my pick is Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, the new Cosmos series with Neil deGrasse Tyson in it. Of course, Carl Sagan did the original Cosmos, and this new Cosmos, of course, it's being created this year, so it has all modern tech and effects and just is awesome, and of course has Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is amazing, and it's just an amazing show that is so interesting to watch. It's built for anybody, so whether you're five or what, any age,
500,
five or 500, exactly. It's definitely, it's within reach of anybody, regardless of your level of education. But at the same time, if you understand a lot of that stuff, it doesn't talk down to you. It just strikes that perfect balance. And I do feel like I'm getting something out of it for sure. And it's just very interesting seeing different aspects of stuff. So they talk about everything from, they just tie everything in nature together. I don't know if you have seen the original Cosmos series, it's very much like that, where it sort of ties the smallest to the very biggest things in the universe. So everything from atoms to evolution or day-to-day life, all the way to what's happening in the center of our galaxy, how things cluster in space, this and that. I mean, it ties all that stuff together, and they focus on different aspects of things in each episode. I think they're up to the 10th episode. And I don't have a good antenna reception for the Fox affiliate here. So I, at least via HD. So I don't get the digital signal, and there's just no friggin' point watching a snowy version of this show. So I watch it on, it's CosmosOnTV.com, I believe. CosmosOnTV.com, or you can just go to Fox.com. And all the episodes are up there for free. Although actually, when I say all the episodes, I think they recently took down the very first one. They put them up there for many, many days. I think that it was like 65 days per episode. So if all of them aren't there, let me see here. So it's episode 3 is what you can watch. And you can buy the first, you can buy them all from Amazon. I don't think you can buy them from iTunes, which is kind of strange. But you can get them from Amazon if you can't stream them on their website. So my secondary pick, the way I watch this thing on my iPad, is with the Puffin browser, which I've talked about before. But I think it's worth talking about again because they've continued to develop it and update it and make it better and better. It is one of those solutions for Flash on the internet that...
Is this thing in Flash? Only the video? Did you say that?
The video is in Flash, yes. Unfortunately.
What is wrong with people?
I really didn't think it was going to be in Flash, but then again, it's Fox, and you know they do what they do.
Everybody knows that Flash is not being supported anymore, right? Like, people have gotten don't a memo at this Flash. Point.
Yeah, you'd think that by now we're all Apple computers don't come with Flash now. You'd think that...
Well, with Adobe saying we're not doing any more Flash stuff, right?
Oh, they're not? I didn't even hear that. I might have heard that, but...
They're not doing any... I don't think they're doing the development... Is it the development tools that they killed off, Jeff, or I guess it was just the phone stuff. For saying we're not doing Flash stuff. Mobile anymore is what I'm talking about. So no mobile device has Flash.
Yeah,
and so, everybody's moving to tablets and smartphones.
And it's impossible to watch this thing on a non-Flash tablet.
They're also migrating away from being the mainstream, in their perspective, multimedia platform for the web, and are looking to push Flash as a more focused media tool outside of web things.
Like, right.
You know, like if you're building a kiosk system.
Sure. Yeah.
And
sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to pull away from your pick.
No, for sure.
Bugs me. Can we just get away from Flash? If you're doing video on the web, do not put it in Flash, please. Yeah. I beg of you.
There have not been many things that I encounter these days that require Flash, and that's why I was like, oh yeah, I have Puffin, I can do that.
That's good.
So
yeah, it's a good pick.
Puffin's great. They bill it as an all around Flash player, I guess. So it's not just for video, although it certainly does that quite well. So the way it works is the Flash is rendered on a server on the back end and then piped through via video to you on your iPad. So it works pretty well for video. I have not really tried it with games, although they say it works with games. So,
Flash game websites that are online.
Right. Yeah. And it's totally worth it. It's $4. You can buy or you can download the free free trial version of it. If you're not convinced and you want to take it for a spin, I think it's fully functional for like 15 days. But yeah, it's Puffin web browser and totally, totally worth the $4. So
do you guys hear HR Puffin stuff in your head
when it's a Puffin browser? No, I don't, but now I will.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
So yeah. With that, you can find the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. Review the show in iTunes, leave a rating, tell a friend. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is how you can get a hold of us, send us feedback, questions, comments, all that stuff. Of course, advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Check out our sponsor for this month, which is Harry's at harrys.com, and use the WHC promo code.
Oh, hey, I got $5
off. Yeah, do you like it?
Yeah, so far.
Cool.
Yeah, it's nice.
Excellent.
Lots of nice stuff in there. So I'll let you know how it goes with the service. I haven't really had a chance to use it yet, but it showed up, and the razor's really nice.
Yeah?
So, yeah.
Awesome.
Did you try shaving with it?
I have not yet.
Okay.
No.
We'll get an update later. Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, at jgamet on Twitter, and zazzle.com/jgamet with the We Have Communicators mug. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Sure thing. It's always fun.
And
fracking time.
Yeah. And you may want to, I don't know what we're going to do about the We Have Communicators mug, because we're going to be changing the name of the show soon.
Well, it's been a while since I've looked at the mug artwork. Did I put just our faces on there?
It's our faces, yeah. And it says wehavecommunicators.com. We'll talk, or we can think
Let's
about
do an
it.
Update.
We could do it. We'll have to do an update of the design of the mug. But I'm not going to reveal the name of the show yet. But yeah, let us know how you feel about the idea of just changing the name. We're going to change it to something that's more obvious, more apparent what the show is about. As much as we like the name We Have Communicators, it's, you know, it doesn't explain what's going on exactly.
Yeah. The new name is Find Jeff's Pants.
Yeah. That is correct. So that'll be the show next week. Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, maccast.com, at MacCast on Twitter, and member.maccast.com is where you can find the member version of his show. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Yep. Thanks as always for letting me hang out for a bit.
Faux show. Hopefully you don't have to deal with fires. Hopefully,
yeah,
it's
dying
down.
I think we're out of the area where we need to have evacuations. So we had been packed up and ready to go, but I don't think we're going to have to go anywhere, which
good.
Is good. A blessing.
Yeah, for sure. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, at GetAppler on Twitter. And of course, GetAppler, GetAppler.com is where you can find the most awesome social network for apps, where you can find all the apps that I have, all the apps that Jeff and Adam have and they like, and what their opinions are of it. And then you can join up too and and share your opinions and get personalized recommendations for stuff to check out.
I guess a good point is, you know, because we do picks on here, and I mentioned doing sort of the anti-pick. Well, I mean, literally with Appler, if you want to know what things I'm not enjoying or I think are just meh, one of my favorites is the So-So, because I have apps that are okay, but they're not, you know, they're not something I would recommend. So that's kind of a good way to say, hey, this is an okay app for doing this, but it's not something that's like the app that you want. So you can kind of get a little bit of everything. And I really like the commenting, you know, and being able to ask people questions. So if you go on there and you see one of my picks and you're like, why did Adam say that was So-So? Or, and I try as much as possible to put in a comment, but I don't always. So if you're curious, you know, you can just hit me on there and say, hey, why did you not pick this? Or what's your alternative pick? That's the other thing I'll try and do, because it's easy to link in the comment too, or your review, to say, hey, this one is okay, but this one I really like. So
yeah, I try to do that too. A lot of my weather apps are like that. Basically, I say I don't like any weather app, and then there's the one that I do like, and I link to that one in all of my...
Yeah, it makes it easier to find that stuff, so...
Yeah.
A lot easier.
Yep. I'm just cruising over to your... I guess I can't go to negatively rated. You can see all rated.
There's an update for you.
To put a negatively rated selection in there?
Yeah.
Eh, I don't know. Maybe not. We'll see. But yeah, that's it. We'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod, and an internet communicator.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck.